Hello and welcome to the November 18th Annals of Internal Medicine podcast. I'm Dr. Christine Lane, Annals Editor-in-Chief, and I'm looking forward to giving you a quick peek at the new articles you'll find on annals.org. Let's get started. After the demolition of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control's process for developing vaccine recommendations, professional societies, including the American Academy of Pediatrics, the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, the Infectious Disease Society of America, and the American College of Physicians began evidence-based processes to fill the gap. The first article I'll mention reports the American College of Physicians' recommendations for influenza vaccination in non-pregnant, immunocompetent adults. ACP's Population Health and Medical Science Committee developed the rapid practice points based on a rapid review by the ACP Center for Evidence Reviews at Cochrane, Austria, which is available on annals.org. Additional evidence came from a focused update of the 2024 Comprehensive High-Quality Evidence Review conducted by the European Center for Disease Prevention and Control. The American College of Physicians focused on the comparative effectiveness of influenza vaccines compared with each other because of the established efficacy and safety of the standard influenza vaccines. The resulting recommendations are, first, adults aged 18 to 64 years who are not pregnant or immunocompromised should receive either a standard dose trivalent or a standard dose quadrivalent influenza vaccine. This includes cell-based, egg-based, adjuvanted, or recombinant vaccines. Second, adults aged 65 years or older who are not immunocompromised should receive either a high-dose trivalent or a high-dose quadrivalent egg-based influenza vaccine. Live kidney donation is a wonderfully altruistic act, and it is imperative to understand the health consequences for kidney donors. Some men who donate a kidney through laparoscopic technique can develop a scrotal hydrocele. If the fluid accumulation becomes large and causes discomfort, surgical drainage becomes necessary. Until now, we haven't had good information about how often this happens. The next article I'll highlight fills this information gap by comparing scrotal surgery rates after laparoscopic nephrectomy in male living kidney donors compared with non-donors. Using administrative healthcare databases in Ontario, Canada, the researchers studied almost 900 men who underwent a laparoscopic donor nephrectomy between April 2002 and March 2023. These donors were matched in a 1-to-10 ratio with almost 9,000 male non-donors. The rate of hospitalization for surgery to address a unilateral scrotal fluid collection was 8.3 per 1,000 person-years in donors, compared to 0.2 per 1,000 person-years in non-donors. This means that over a 20-year period, 1 in 8 donors required scrotal surgery compared to 1 in 143 non-donors. The hydrocelectomies typically occurred years after the donor nephrectomy, and patients typically returned to normal activities in a few weeks. These findings underscored the need for male kidney donors to be informed about the risk and advised on symptoms to monitor after donation. Future research is needed to determine whether changing the donation surgery technique might lower the risk of hydrocele. There is increasing awareness that social factors are powerful influences on health and well-being, and addressing unmet social needs can improve a person's health in ways that medical interventions cannot. The first step in addressing unmet social needs is to identify those needs. Next is a systematic review of 23 studies published between 2015 and 2025 that evaluated U.S. primary care-based programs that use structured tools to screen adult patients for at least one of three social needs measures: food insecurity, transportation challenges, and housing insecurity, followed by an intervention to address the identified needs in a primary care setting. The review found that screening rates varied wildly from 2% to 91%. In the four studies with the highest percentage of screened patients, all four received additional staff to assist in the clinic with the screening process. The percentage of patients reporting at least one social need ranged between 10% and 100%. Patients reported wide variability in their ability to address unmet social needs, with 28 to 89% of patients receiving needed resources. Intervention rates were generally higher among programs focusing on targeted populations compared to general populations. The findings of this review emphasize that considerable gaps remain in our understanding of the factors required to successfully screen for and effectively address social needs to improve health outcomes. We haven't heard much about the Oropouche virus recently, but it's still around in some locations. Next is a study that describes the epidemiology, clinical presentation, and outcomes of laboratory-confirmed Oropouche virus disease cases in Iquitos, Peru, after the 2023 outbreak in Latin America. Researchers analyzed data from Peru's National Epidemiological Surveillance System for arboviruses describing 496 patients with Oropouche virus disease confirmed by qualitative reverse transcription polymerase chain reaction from December 31, 2023 through September 30, 2024. The mean age of the cohort was about 28 years, and about 38% of the cases occurred in children. The predominant clinical manifestations were headache, fever, myalgia, and arthralgias. There was one dengue co-infection and one malaria co-infection. Only 2% of patients required hospitalization compared to hospitalization rates of 10 to 15% reported in Brazilian cohorts. The authors say that enhanced surveillance is warranted to monitor co-circulating arboviruses, potential sexual transmission, neurological complications, and adverse birth outcomes. Next is a systematic review of studies evaluating the effectiveness of interventions to mitigate healthcare professional burnout. The researchers identified and reviewed 93 randomized controlled trials and 6 cluster of randomized controlled trials, evaluating individual level interventions encompassing 9,330 participants. They conclude that, among doctors, professional coaching was probably effective in reducing some aspects of burnout, but mindfulness-based interventions were not very effective. However, the available data suggests that mindfulness-based interventions may reduce burnout among nurses and midwives. Mindfulness-based and professional coaching interventions were generally longer than 4 weeks in duration. Most trials were unblinded with subjective outcomes, and there was a substantial heterogeneity among interventions and populations. Editorialist Dr. Colin West writes, quote, "Clearly, many studies of healthcare professional burnout and well-being have important limitations. We should not let these limitations obscure larger gains in knowledge of effective interventions over time, even as more work is needed. If we allow perfection to be the enemy of progress, we risk missing opportunities for greater evidence-informed steps forward to benefit healthcare professionals and their patients." End quote. Also new is a commentary on the cost of vaccine hesitancy and a brief research report on temperature-related deaths in the U.S. between 1994 and 2024. The bottom line of this brief report is that there has been an increase in both cold and heat-related deaths. Sepsis is the leading cause of death and disability worldwide. Mortality has improved in the last few decades, but remains high, and survivors frequently experience long-term complications. This month's In the Clinic review is on the management of sepsis in hospitalized patients. Go to annals.org for a practical review on this important condition. That brings us to the end of this podcast. Thanks for listening. I hope I've encouraged you to go to annals.org to read some of the new material I've mentioned here. Thanks to Beth Jenkinson, Bernie Turner, and Andrew Langman for their technical support.